Was ist das Geheimnis passionierter Teams? Warum gibt es nur so wenige davon? Und wie können wir es schaffen, dass es mehr werden? Wenn euch diese Fragen umtreiben, dann seid ihr hier genau richtig. Wir sprechen mit nationalen und internationalen Experten zu diesem Thema und gehen dem Geheimnis passionierter Teams nach. Denn das ist unsere Passion, dafür brennen wir. Willkommen beim Passionate Teams Podcast. So, welcome everybody to a new episode of the Passionate Teams Podcast. Today I have a guest with me, it's Virginia. And Virginia, maybe you can just introduce yourself in a few sentences.
Sure. So my name is Virginia Anderson, and through my accent, you can hear that I'm American and also Luxembourgish. And I've worked in the banking sector for many years, and I also have been in the sports world as a professional athlete, coach, and referee. So I'm a person who wears lots of different hats, as you could say.
And what are you currently doing? What's your main work
you're
doing?
My main work is I have my own company, and I am a coach. Okay. So I do systemic coaching or team coaching, and I also do consultancy also, and I work with companies and with sports persons in order to help them through change and find their passion, you know, in order to get through change.
Okay, there we have already our topic, passion. So how would you define a passionate team or a passionate company maybe?
My definition is it's a team that has a purpose and are able to harness their power together. You know, they're able to take that power and go above and beyond what's expected of them. So, in America, you say the person gives 110%. And that 110% can be to surpass expectations, or it can be to get through really difficult times and achieve what they need to achieve.
Okay. And did you ever have a chance to work in such a passionate team?
Oh, yes. I worked with, when I think back, most of the teams I have worked with were passionate or became passionate, I would say. I can give you one example. I worked in the banking sector for many, many years, and I worked for a huge international bank. And it's quite an odd team, I would say, because it wasn't just a team sitting in one room, you know, that was working together. It was a global team. Mm-hmm. So we had to make sure that transactions were executed across the world. And we had offices, we had a major operational office in the UK, and we had offices in every country in the world, like 97 different countries. And it had to flow perfectly. Otherwise, you could have financial losses. And it was amazing because this was an exceptional team. People were proactive. People shared information, you know, across the world, because we had to make sure everything was executed on time. And we're talking time frames were executed within one day, where instructions had and money had to be moved within one day to 2 days across the entire world.
So, okay. And was it like that right from the beginning, or did it move in this direction, and did the team become passionate over time?
I would say it was the mentality of the organization at that time. And we're talking quite a long time ago, so the 1990s. So we had first to deal with manual instructions, you know, physical instructions that had to come through. It was, you had to work very hard to make sure what you did was done correctly and no mistakes. Then it became automated, and it became even more complex. And you had clients who were opening up accounts in Argentina, you know, and you need to know what the local laws were. You had to be able to explain the type of entity, you know, that was going to be investing in that country in order for them to allow it, you know, to open up the accounts. And it was an amazing team, because people knew that they knew their responsibility, they knew their roles, and they wanted to share their knowledge. And it actually, I would say it created my mentality from a work perspective.
Okay. So what did this company different maybe than other companies where you don't see such passionate teams? There has to be something that the company did differently,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I would say that's a good question if I really sit down and think about it. It's they knew what their purpose was. And they had the same values in every company that they opened up, every subsidiary that they opened up across the world. They knew who they were. They knew what their entity does, what they're representing. Yeah.
Okay. So when I heard the words values, yeah, this is something, of course, a lot of companies have values, company values somewhere. So, but this sounds to me like this company did a better job in communicating these values, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And the values came out. So, for example, if I had to call somebody up in Malaysia, I knew, mm-hmm. I knew I was working in this company and they were working in the same company. And we knew that we had to service the client. And so I trusted that the information that they gave me was the information that I could pass on to the client. And
so there was already some common ground.
Yes, yeah, absolutely common ground. There was, I would say we had a goal. We knew we had to execute for the client. And in the banking mm-hmm. sector, which is quite interesting, is that if you make mistakes, you know that there will be financial losses. So there's another driver there. There's also a competitive mindset of and pride that I'm not going to make a mistake because I don't want to make a financial loss. So it's a different. I mean, me coming from the sports world, it's kind of this competitiveness coming out of you, and we all had to come together to make sure that the transaction was going to work. Otherwise, you could lose from 40 to 50 to 200,000 euros in one transaction really easily.
But there was no punishment, right, if you did a mistake?
No, I made two really good mistakes that I tell people about when I do my risk training. And no, there was no punishment. It was a learning culture. So if you made a mistake, you had to sit down and the whole team analyzed what happened. And this culture is still in that organization because many, many years, this one of the mistakes that I had made, which was it was linked to the business cycle. So I use it in a training course. And I was in another bank. I explained the story and I had a person say to me, I know this story. And I thought, how could you know this? You just started working in this company.
Interesting.
They knew it because they're using the same story in their trainings still today.
That's really interesting, yeah. So it seems to be like this is a really cool story.
It is, yes.
Something that sticks.
Yes, it sticks in your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Is this also an interesting story for people who are not in the financial sector?
Good question. Yeah, I can explain it in a very simple way.
Or maybe you can just explain your learnings.
Sure.
Maybe could be also.
Sure. And in this industry, I'm sure everyone has heard of mergers and acquisitions, where companies buy other companies, and these things are called corporate actions. So if something in a company happens, they need to raise money, so they issue shares out into the market so people can buy them. And what happened was that I personally overthought and gave too much information, and you had a chain of information that had to flow. So I sent instruction, please buy these shares, which came from the clients. And then I said, oh, be careful because in Brazil, blah, 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 blah. You know, and it was too much information. And my message went to the UK, then it went to Brazil. And then in the end, The people in Brazil were so wrapped up with the extra information that I sent, they forgot to actually send to the company, "We want to buy the shares."
Okay. So information overload.
Being too caring, over-caring, over-worrying. And at that time, it was an inflationary market. The prices were going crazy. What we had to do is we had to buy the shares on the market at market price instead of this discounted price. Because the client sent the right instruction, and we missed all the cutoff times. So we generated a really good loss. if I could see. Are you interested in how much? This is a long, long time ago. But it was about, we lost about $300,000.
That's quite some money. Yeah.
And that's just the difference in market price. And you could say, "Oh, yes, I should be fired." You know, that could be a mentality that's out there. In the end, what we did was we analyzed what went wrong, what happened. We looked at it from the people in Brazil and the people in the UK and the people in where I was working in Luxembourg. And we realized, well, wait a second. And I had people say to me, "But it wasn't your fault. You really didn't make a mistake." But I still said, "No, wait. You know, I created the overflow of information. You know, so I created this chain." In the end, they shared the loss because it's a huge international organization. They shared the loss between the different offices, which can be done. And they took that actual mistake and they put the learnings behind it. And in the end, they use it today as a training course for people. The biggest learning I had was if you have a question and you have intuition and you're curious, pick up the telephone, you know, and ask.
Talk to people.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly. I mean, and you have really fast cutoff times. You had to, you know, meet these cutoff times. And if you have to send an instruction, send a specific instruction and then pick up the telephone. Because we didn't have all the information. We were asking too many questions and the possibility to be confused was there, which happened. And then it's multicultures too. So it's very easy to make a mistake because you can interpret a message in a different way. As I say, written instructions are probably the worst form of communication.
But what I hear is also that there was some learning culture in the company. So of course the mistake was done. But then there was also some kind of like a retrospective where you looked back, okay, what happened? What was the real root cause? And then try to make sure that this doesn't happen again, right?
Exactly. And I mean, we're talking, it's been over 20 years that they're actually using this example. So they're this learning culture is, they're not forgetting the past. And that really, for me, that creates a really strong team culture because people will realize, wait, you know, I can trust the person. If I have a question, I can pick up the phone. I can ask. I can get the right information. You know, I don't just have to put my head down, close my eyes, forget about it, and just do my job. I mean, there are other people out there who can help me. It was quite interesting.
But one of the things you do as a coach is also working with teams, definitely. Right? And sometimes I think one of the things is also about, okay, how can I get more passion in the teams, right? So what is your secret sauce here, friend, when you start with teams? Where do you look first and what are the steps you take most of the time?
What I do is I walk in being curious. And also and believing in humankind. That's a good way of saying it. Because I believe every single person has potential. And so what I do is if I'm coaching a basketball team, I want to figure out what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses. If I'm coming into a corporate team, same type of thing. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? What are their gaps? And to find out really what are their passions also. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And
is there something which you see more than once? Is there some, do we see some patterns?
Yes, absolutely. You see, what I do is I look and I say, okay, what are the different roles that people are taking in the teams? You know, I'll use a sport example. So if I have a sport team, I'm going to look and say, okay, who is the true leader of this team? You know, not the assigned leader or not the assigned captain. Who are the creative people? Who's the one who can perform under pressure? Who's the person who's the enjoyable person, the person who likes to have fun? And I also I look at their skill sets too, and I see who has what type of skills, and where maybe are there some skills gaps? Because I find to really have a strong, passionate team who's highly motivated, people need to trust in themselves. They also need to know that they have support from other people. For example, if I'm playing basketball and I get injured, I need to know that if I'm replaced, that other person can also come in and perform at the same type of level as I'm performing. Mm-hmm. And I find that's incredibly important, is to empower people and trust them and allow them to, I would say, to have a voice and to be able to play to their best ability. I don't know if that makes, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And because what also comes up to me is that everybody is different,
absolutely.
Right? And everybody has different strengths and different weaknesses maybe also, and different kind of passions, different kind of personalities, different kinds of backgrounds. So I think you really have to work on, if you want to work with a team, you really have to work with single people and look at them one by one. What is the special thing about this person? And what is the special thing about this person? And how can they maybe fit together and play better together? Something like that, right?
I mean, I was coaching a young boys team. They were ages 11 to 13. And I had one child who, his attention span wasn't really long. I mean, most of the kids anyway,
okay.
Their attention span was short. but this young boy, he would start doing crazy things. You know, he would start doing very creative things. He would start shooting the basketball in a funny way. He would make suggestions to play a different type of game. And I could have been that coach that stands up and says, stop that, go sit down. I could yell at him. In the end, I mean, I looked at him. I thought, wow, this is important to him. His creativity is important. So what I would do is I would say to him, I said, wow, you are so creative, you know, and if he made a suggestion, you know, I would say, okay, that sounds interesting. And there were times where I would come in and say, okay, if the team works really hard, I will let the next drill, I will let somebody make a suggestion and we can do that drill. And there are times where he suggested, can we do this? And then I would say yes, and I would let the kids do that drill. And it was amazing because his eyes would light up. He would feel so proud and happy, and he could be creative. You know, I didn't suppress his creativity. Mm-hmm. And it helped in the end. It helps the team because the team also saw that I trusted somebody. I trusted someone on the team, even though that was maybe the youngest and smallest player. And I had many times where people would say, oh, you're too nice. You know, you're too nice with those kids. And I always stood my ground and said, no, I'm not too nice. I am believing in these kids. I'm allowing for their differences. I'm allowing for their growth. And And I know this is going to help them in the future. Instead of, you know, saying you have to be a certain way, you have to be a clone, you have to play a certain way. Because I knew truly that one day that young boy's creativity is going to make a difference in another game. You know, he's going to be able to perform in a different way, which is actually going to help the team win. You know, and I.
Yeah, because you're different.
Exactly, he's different. You'll think of something.
And that's the thing. If you're like anybody else, then how can you win? You're easy to see what will happen. You're easy to propose what will be the next action you will do as a team. But if you use your uniqueness and your creativity, you can do different stuff and that nobody expects. Yes, and then you're
exactly
in the lead, right?
Exactly. And I mean, if you translate that back into the business world, many organizations, you know, they have their procedures. They say you have to work this way, but they close down this innovative creativity that might come from some other people. And I think we have to open that up, because a team, I always say your first team is only as good as your second team pushes you. And many times a first team, if they don't think they have to improve, they don't think they have to be creative, or they're forced to work in a certain way, they're never going to reach their full potential. And when you have a second team that's competing, but also pushing that team, it can be in a very positive way. It can be, you know, in a competitive way. It allows for teams to start, you know, to really perform and not be complacent. And I think in the corporate world also, I've seen in the corporate teams, we need these creative people. We need these people who will speak out. But we also need the other people who will stick to the processes and procedures too. Yeah. We need everything.
Yeah,
I know.
We need everything. We need people who are really maybe process-driven and like to define stuff, but we also need people who sometimes break the rules. Sometimes have maybe crazy ideas nobody had before. And that's sometimes even happening in science, right? That some scientist from a completely different area has an interesting idea, which nobody else from the other departments or the other areas would think of, because they think it's crazy. But then when they look at it, then they find out it's not that crazy at all. Maybe there's some potential we can use, and there's a completely new way of addressing some issue or something, right?
I've also seen, doing client services trainings, and so you have a lot of people who do the same kind of repetitive jobs, the same type of questions coming in from clients, and then all of a sudden they get a question coming in that is different, you know, that's abnormal, or they're working with transactions and it's always the same, and this is different. And I always tell people, it's so important to use your intuition, because that means in question, like, what's going on? This is not really normal. Because then you can actually, you can say, well, wait, maybe the process is not working. Maybe there's a transaction that's going through that shouldn't be going through. Maybe this is a client who is asking for something that maybe they shouldn't be asking for. And going back to my mistake, maybe that's something that I should have done also is say, okay, wait a second. I have an intuition. I know there's something different. I need to question it. You know, I need to step back. I need to say, what's really going on here? And I was working in a silo, and I should have used my team who I trusted, because I knew they had the information in Brazil, for example. I knew I could.
Yeah, right.
And, I think it's so important to also to work with your to be trusted, to feel empowered, and also not to be robots, but to listen to your intuition. If something doesn't seem normal, then question it. Yeah.
Right. So. What was your worst experience regarding teams? So when you joined a company or when you maybe were in the team on your own, so what was your worst experience so far?
When I really looked at it, I've had a lot of good experiences, because even if I came into a team and there was a bad experience, I tried to influence it. However, actually I had one situation where I went into a team and it was pretty horrific, if I can say. Actually, in that specific company, okay. I had a short-term contract. And so I couldn't influence like I had worked previously in other companies where I had, you know, an indefinite contract. And this team, there was a lot of toxic energy. There was negativity. There was blaming. There was a lot of people who were very, very self-serving. It was not harmonious, and you could actually feel the energy that was very, very heavy and very negative.
Where did it come from?
There was so much change that had happened in that company and change in management that that I think that there wasn't stability. I would say stability and really a strong purpose for that organization. Excuse me. So people didn't know what their roles were. They didn't know what was expected of them. It was very vague. And they didn't have a strong vision, and also the values just kind of fell apart. And people, they became very self-serving. They cared only about themselves. It was exactly
because nobody else is doing it, right?
And well, they say, well, nobody cares. You know, or the management, you know, you put in parentheses, doesn't care. Well, they're just not going to be here anyway. So I find that the type of change, I mean, in 8 years, they had three different senior managements. You know, and it was just, that's a lot. Yeah.
That's a
lot. Yeah, and it was a fairly new company also.
Yeah.
And, I could feel this heavy negative energy. And also in some of the individual teams, you could see people starting to over control. You could see there was a lack of trust. You could see that nobody felt empowered. There was no passion, and you could see people had passion, but it was just being held back. It was like they were being stifled, you know, like they couldn't breathe type of thing.
Yeah, sounds really like a toxic place for me.
For me, it was very shocking. Yeah, I mean, even in the team that I was working, the smaller group that I was working, I would come in and say, oh, could we have a meeting? And I would have a person turn and say, no, I'm busy. And I never had that before. I never had somebody say no. Mm. And it really affected me. You know, and
yes, of course. And then you will also become the same person, the same zombie over time, right? If you stay in such an environment.
Then fear pops up, and then people think they lose their self-worth. Then they think, oh, I can't work in another company. I'll never be good enough. It's like a spiral. It was really, really interesting for me to go into this atmosphere. And just say, wow, this is different. You know, I haven't been in an atmosphere like this before. Yeah, it was difficult.
And
I had a determined contract. So I came into the company and I had specific objectives that I needed to put in place. And, you know, over a period. And so when my contract was finished, they didn't have a headcount, you know, they didn't have a job available. However, I did do my best to stay around. And I can say during the period that I was there, we were able to really transform the mentality and the culture by allowing people to have voice, allowing people to speak. We did that using different techniques. So we had one project, we call it a kitchen table conversation. A typical thing is like, where do you have your greatest conversations? It's technically in the kitchen when people are cooking, you know? Yeah, depending on the culture. So we were able to energize the people and get them to start to talk within a structure on something that they were passionate about, but that was important to them. And we started to get voice coming up. And then I was also doing client services training, but it was more about looking at what is the mindset that you need to have when you're dealing with difficult clients, for example. And it was all about knowing what you can and cannot control. Because many of the people, if you are focusing on things you can't control, you get frustrated, you lose your passion. And it was about saying, okay, these are things I can control. I can control myself. I can control my reactions. You know, I can re-harness my energy. I can find my passion. And there was a huge turnaround in the organization and in different teams. And you saw people saying, oh my God, I can actually deal with a difficult client who's calling me. I'm able to work with my colleague. I'm able to have courage to discuss issues with my managers who I maybe was afraid of before. So we opened up an environment of people being able to speak and being heard. And it really,
mm-hmm.
And I find that's everywhere. I think that's also in the sports realm also. If you're playing a team and a coach just screams at you and doesn't allow you to be yourself, you know, to be your creative self, to work, you know, be able to work towards your strengths, that it's very difficult to perform.
Yeah, it sounds like this is a bit also your secret sauce, right? That people can speak up, people are heard, and that you can be yourself.
For me, that is my mantra, as they say. I don't know. Maybe it's when I was young. You know, I found that is something that is incredibly important. I mean, also as a professional basketball player, I mean, I could have been that one professional person who takes over and, you know, and says, I'm going to do everything. For me, no. It's like if I'm going to be the leader of the team, I'm more of an orchestrator, you know, like a conductor. And I know there's times where if everyone is going to stop me, that there's a lot of other people who are free and available. You know, I can be a decoy and I can easily pass the ball to somebody who can make a basket and win the game. And just to see their eyes light up and feel proud and happy for me is absolutely amazing. You know, or I can.
Thank you very much, Virginia. I think this were really, really, really nice last finishing words. I like your mantra a lot. And I truly believe in the same direction. This is really important. And thank you for your time and for being on the podcast today. And I hope to see you somewhere sometime.
I always travel around Germany. So if I'm around, I will be very happy to meet with you. It would be great. Come to Luxembourg. You're always welcome to meet.
Okay. Yeah, I've never been to Luxembourg, I have to say. It is really, I have to admit that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And bye.